This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes. Our guest today, 92-year-old Ralph Thiessen of Merced, California. Born in Wisconsin, he grew up in Chowchilla, California, the fourth of 10 children. If you happen to grow up in Chowchilla, he might just have been your little league coach. He did that for 14 years. But before all of that, Ralph had to survive World War II aboard the USS Saratoga, an aircraft carrier that the Japanese claimed seven times to have sunk during World War II. Each and every time that came out, it was what we would call in today's world, fake news. And, you know, sometimes we meet veterans here who they're really talkative. They volunteer every memory and emotion really freely. Other times we encounter men more like Ralph, who will tell you he's always been a little bit on the shy side. But there are some stories in his memory bank, some life experiences most of us will never face. And one of the elements that makes his story so powerful is the bond he shared with a high school friend. By the way, that was not the only small world connection he made in the Navy. One time, while his ship, that Saratoga, was docked at Pearl Harbor, Ralph heard his name over the loudspeaker. He'd been summoned by a friend from his hometown who just so happened to have access to a landing barge, not to mention a Jeep on Oahu. They had a memorable liberty together 2,500 miles from their small town homes in the middle of the Golden State. That was one friend from back home, but you heard Ralph talk quite a bit about Tom Bagley, that friend from Chowchilla High School whom he encountered in the chow line on the Saratoga. What are the odds that two high school buddies could join different branches of the service, the Navy and the Marines, but end up on the same ship?
A casual observer might say, hey, if you're going to be in the Marine Corps in World War II, you're probably a lot safer being on an aircraft carrier than storming the beaches at Tarawa or Iwo Jima or Okinawa or something like
that.
But that's not how it worked out for him.
No, it didn't.
And he had some kind of premonition of this?
He did. We went to an island called Ulithi, and there was a large number of ships out there. I mean, they had probably like 1,000.
Right.
And so we took off from there. We went to Japan and hit Japan for a couple of days. And then we went to Iwo Jima. Part of the convoy went to Okinawa, but they sent us to Iwo Jima.
And this is while they're still fighting for the island?
Mm-hmm. Put over the ship's radio that we could see Iwo Jima.
You guys saw the flag flying on top of it?
Didn't see that. We was there in the first few days.
As this is going on, Tom is expressing to you that he doesn't think he's ever going to make it back home?
And that's what he did. We were on the gun mount, and we was talking, and he said, I'm not coming home. I said, what? And I was surprised him telling me that. I told him, I just said, Tom, are you going home? I said, no. So he said, tell my parents I love them. And my sisters, he had two sisters. I love them also. That was it.
And had you guys encountered kamikaze attacks before?
No, that was the first one.
So tell me about that day. How did that unfold for you?
Well, we went in lockdown, and the next morning I got up and I said, I got to go to the Marine Corps. I heard some of the Marines had gotten killed. So I went up to his apartment, and Marine up there told me he knew I was a friend of Tom's. He said Tom didn't make it. I couldn't believe it.
If there's more you want to say about that, I don't want to stop you. But tell me about the attack itself. How many kamikazes attacked the Saratoga, and where were you while that was going on?
I was down in the room running the pumps if I had to.
So general quarters sounded, you knew you were under attack?
Right.
So you're down there waiting for orders of...
Yeah, one of them run the pumps when we put the fires out and start putting bodies on the flight deck where there's space to bury them at sea.
Did you feel the impact of any of those planes or bombs?
No, not really. I could hear our guns shooting, and I was mounted right above where our air intake. I could have went up there and seen the battle, but I decided I didn't want to do that. That was before Tom died.
I'm just reading what you and your wife put together here. It talks about how on February 16th, the Saratoga and the Enterprise joined forces with escorts and bombed the area of bases around Tokyo with their planes. And this largest carrier task force ever assembled gathered off the coast of Japan, consisting of 15 large carriers with destroyers, cruisers, and battleships. Saratoga and other ships made aerial strikes on Tokyo, Japan on the 17th, 18th, and 19th of February. They bombed Japan around the clock, making daylight strikes, while the Saratoga and three other carriers, equipped with radar for night flying, made daring night strikes against Tokyo. Harassing the Japanese day and night kept their forces from giving any assistance to the army, which was dug in at Iwo Jima. And then on the 19th, the Saratoga rendezvoused with the fueling group at dawn. One half of the invasion group went to Okinawa, as you said, while the Saratoga continued on to Iwo Jima. Later, you received more replacement aircraft and launched night patrols around Iwo Jima and Chichijima. On February 20th, more planes were sent out on patrol, but there was no report of the enemy. On February 21st, with only three destroyers to help screen the carrier, the Saratoga proceeded eastward toward her area for night patrol. That afternoon, Captain Mobus announced Iwo Jima and Mount Suribachi was visible within 25 miles, so those who wanted to see the island should go topside. And this is when you say you and Tom were sitting on the gun mount, talking of home. You told me the promise he asked you to keep. So it's only 4 hours after that, 5 o'clock, that general quarters sounds, man your battle stations, and everyone was scrambling. The Japanese attack began with fighter planes and kamikaze planes coming through the low cloud cover, and the insufficient escorts made the Saratoga a vulnerable target. After 3 hours and 17 minutes of fighting, 25 to 30 incoming planes, 7 bombs, and 5 kamikazes hit the ship. And this says, the old lady quivered from stem to stern as the flight deck and hull absorbed the beating. 7 bombs and 5 kamikazes. I mean, I've talked to guys where 1 kamikaze hit them, and it hit them in the right spot, and that was enough.
All right.
So you're in the fire room on the port side of the ship.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to the fire room on the starboard side of the ship?
They got hit. It was the fire room 7. There's a few of them killed there. In fact, they put these 3 bodies on the hangar deck and covered them up. And I did look at them. Somebody pulled the sheets back. And one was the chief, and I don't know what the other guys were.
But if you had been in that fire room,
I wouldn't be here.
Yeah. So basically the identical station on the other side of the ship is taken out. And this damage from all those bombs and the kamikazes, it's tearing up different parts of the ship. During the same battle, the USS Bismarck Sea was hit and sunk. Did you see any of that?
I seen it on fire, yeah. And the distance was on fire.
Yeah, and so the Bismarck Sea is sunk, and a lot of their crew was in the water. Some of them were killed by Japanese planes strafing the water. And all this is going on, and your ship is hit, as we said, by 7 bombs and 5 kamikazes. That's a lot of damage. Did you go topside and see that damage, see what had happened to your ship?
Not at the time, no. I seen pictures, but I didn't go up there. In fact, after the battle, I was washing blood off the air intake.
How'd the blood get there?
Some guys came down that way that were injured. Those are the guys I helped get out.
But if someone knocks on that hatch, you're not supposed to open it.
Right. It's clogged down. They came down from air intake.
Uh-huh.
And that's how the blood got on. I see they were bleeding. One guy was bleeding. So I took him to a place where they could go in the hallway and would go to where their first aid was.
Mm-hmm.
You guys said, you weren't supposed to do that. Yep.
Those guys' lives depended on it. You were going to do it, huh?
Yeah.
How scary was that to hear all this going on above you, then to see some of the wounded coming down? I mean, were you worried that your ship was going to go down? Were you worried that you were going to get killed?
I wasn't too worried. I don't know why. I just didn't think about it.
Mm-hmm. So that battle starts at 5 o'clock at night. It's over before 8:30. So it's nighttime. You said you're cleaning the blood off the air intake. How'd you sleep that night?
Well, a long time ago. I thought a lot about Tom and wondered whether he made it. And like I said, the next morning I went to Marine's quarters and they told me.
I know, like you said, that was a long time ago. And you're an 18-year-old kid. But can you help us understand what that felt like? What that moment was like when they tell you Tom died? Tom was killed?
Oh, you know, you're shook up. A number of things in your mind. And I thought about Tom, I said, the first thing I got to do is see him and find out he's not there.
And you mentioned a burial at sea. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just Tom. It was 123 guys from your ship that you guys had to bury at sea. Mm-hmm. And they bring you all topside for that ceremony?
I was appointed to clean the liver intake, so I didn't get to go.
So you weren't up there to watch it?
I didn't go up there. I was busy washing blood up the walls.
Probably would have been hard to be up there for that.
It would have been.
You've got a couple pictures of him right here. Mm-hmm. And when you see these pictures of Tom, mm-hmm. what comes to mind? What kind of guy was he?
You couldn't beat him. He's one of the best guys I ever met.
Have you ever wondered over the years? I mean, it's been 73 years since this happened. Have you ever found yourself thinking, here's what Tom would have done with his life? Here's mm-hmm. the kind of person he would have been?
Yeah, he'd been a good farmer. He was smart, very smart.
And there were 123 men killed that day in that attack, almost 200 more wounded. Were there other friends of yours or people that you knew that were killed?
Not on the Saratoga. I more or less kept to my apartment. By the time I'd get out, I'd go to get my food for the day.
So what about after that? They probably had to repair your ship a little bit.
Yeah, we did a little repair shop, a little repair on the ship when we was in the Pearl Harbor before we went to Washington. Mm-hmm. They did find that one pilot went through there onto the hangar deck and caught all the plane on the flying deck on fire that we had on there.
Mm-hmm. When you look at those pictures, I mean, there are some pictures of the Saratoga during this attack, flames going everywhere and destroyed planes, body parts, guns that are torn up, the flight deck itself with big ruts and rips in it. You ever look at those pictures and say, how did I survive that?
Not really. I knew I was coming home, but, and so I wasn't too scared about it. The only thing I like to say is my buddy getting killed.
How'd you know you were coming home?
I didn't think anything bad about it. I knew I was coming home. At least I thought I would.
Where do you think that came from?
Oh, maybe my dad.
Because he came home from World War One, or he just raised you to think that way?
I would think that gave me some confidence in some things.
Mm-hmm. So after that, did you have a feeling that the war was going to be over soon, or were you kind of concerned about heading to invade Japan?
The only time I thought the war was going to be over was when I was in Seattle, and newspapers came out about atomic bomb. And I thought, they ain't going to last long now.
So we mentioned, there were five different kamikazes that hit your ship in that attack. You guys had some repairs at Eniwetok, then you go back to Bremerton, and they're going to do the rest of the repairs.
Well, we had some sailors that were really injured very bad, so we took them off. Four or five that they took off the ship there, they get medical attention. There might have been more than that.
But when you guys made it all the way back to the States, and you're in Bremerton, Washington, they discover that the body of one of the kamikaze pilots is still in there?
It was, yeah. It was on the other side, but it was in the middle, more in the middle of the ship. Hangar deck, just exploded in there, and the planes just started burning up.
So they're cleaning all that up, and they find mm-hmm. one of the guys who damaged your ship still in that cockpit.
Mm-hmm.
So you said you're in Washington, and you saw the newspaper headline? Atomic bomb was dropped?
Yeah.
You probably didn't know what an atomic bomb was, right?
It was about to kill a lot of people, so that'd be big.
And what about when they said, a week later, the war's over, Japan has surrendered, this thing's all done? What did that mean to you? What did that feel like?
Well, I was glad, but I didn't get too emotional about it, but I was glad it was over.
It was over, but Ralph still had a job to do, a very important promise to keep. We'll hear how he carried out that pledge he had made the night before his friend Tom Begley was killed on the Saratoga. By the way, if you ever find yourself on the island of Oahu and you visit what locals there refer to simply as the Punch Bowl, that's the National Memorial Cemetery of the Pacific in the Punch Bowl Crater, you can find Tom Begley's name there etched in stone. Since Tom was buried at sea, his name is listed with so many others in the Courts of the Missing. A haunting memorial to those whose remains have never been recovered. Ralph Thiessen and his wife Noreen have been there. They wouldn't stop looking until they found Tom's name. You also heard Ralph talk about the atomic bomb, but I bet you didn't know it took two atomic detonations to sink that oh-so-resilient USS Saratoga, or that you can actually go dive amongst the wreckage of that historic carrier. We'll explore those topics and more when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Have you ever looked at a box of old videotapes or photos and said, one of these days I'm going to do something with those? I know the feeling. But more importantly, I found the solution at VHSmaster.com. VHS Master will take all your old VHS and 8mm tapes and reels and convert them to DVDs and digital videos, ensuring that your priceless memories will last for years to come. They'll even preserve and restore photos, slides, and audio cassettes. Go to VHSmaster.com. That's VHSmaster.com. And tell them you heard about them on Hometown Heroes.